This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, BFM 89.9. It is the morning run. I'm Julian Ng and joined by Wong Xiaoning this morning. Good morning, Xiaoning. How are you?
Good. And for a change, you remembered my name. Yesterday, you called me Lin.
You know, I get very confused.
Well, it is 6 a.m. in the morning, but yes, it's good to be in the studio.
You guys should help me out by just being in the studio at the same time so that I won't make that mistake.
But we look totally different though. But never mind, it's good to be in the studio. It's halfway through the week already, right? Because we had a very short week this week.
Excellent. I'm always looking forward to whatever.
And tomorrow's Halloween day, by the way.
Is it?
Yes, tomorrow's the 31st of October.
It's one of the greatest exports of America.
I think it's just, I don't mind. Any excuse to eat candy, chocolate, it's fine with me, you know.
You are a mean baker as well, Xiaoning. You've made some good stuff, cakes and stuff.
Yeah, but not for cookies. Tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm just looking forward to the commercial candy stuff.
Okay, you're treating tomorrow.
Yes.
Sorry, you're tricking tomorrow and not treating tomorrow. All right, as per usual, we have got some interesting stories for you in this 6 a.m. hour. Xiaoning, what do we have?
Well, you know, Tun Mahathir, I'm old enough to remember the early days when he was Prime Minister in 1981. So today, let's go down memory lane.
Okay, excellent. And also, we are all addicted to screens, right? Don't say you're not, because you probably are. And we're going to talk about ways to get you off that addiction. And also, if you have any comments for us, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd love to hear from you. And coming up next, the ums and ahs in your speech. They're actually not such a bad thing. We'll talk about that. So in the meantime, here's Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng and also Wong Xiaoning with me. Thanks for joining us at this 6:08 in the morning. If you're awake and joining us, thank you very much. The ums and ahs in your speech, they're not a bad thing. Disfluencies is what I called, as opposed to fluencies, I suppose. And scientists think that these are actually organic features of your speech, and we shouldn't at all costs try to stamp it out.
Yeah, because apparently, according to this article, you say the mm and the ah because it's part of that thinking process as you verbalize your thoughts, right? So yeah. If you just rattle off blah, 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 that means maybe you haven't given much thought to what you said.
Empty vessels, right?
Yeah, empty vessels make the most noise. So they are like nice little pauses. And sometimes also I think they benefit the listener because everyone gets a little bit of a moment to kind of reflect what has just been said rather than a lot of words and then you just get lost in it.
I think I use it a lot, especially before I joined the radio station, like BFM. When I first started, even going on air, and maybe even today, I still use a lot of ums and ahs, but definitely I've been trained to be more conscious about it. But I find that it's, for me, from a personal experience viewpoint, it's quite unnatural because my natural way of speaking is peppered with a lot of ums and ahs. And therefore, when I'm required to eliminate them, I find that my thought processes are being affected.
Oh, so Julian, you're a deep thinker then.
I don't know. I don't know if
with
I
the
am.
Many ums
Maybe
and
I'm just
ahs.
A bad talker.
But I don't see why people should curtail them so much, unless it really, I mean, makes the whole conversation very difficult. Sometimes a little pause here and there is not a bad thing, and a makes the conversation more real, right? It's a little bit
for
like...
Sure.
If you spoke perfectly, it's like a robot. Come on.
It can irritate some people, though.
Yeah.
Because if you are too, what do you call it? See, I'm doing it now. If
too, you're too many and ahs, is it?
Too hesitant in your speech. Then the other person, the listener, might get,
What's going on? Is it that kind of
They might get
mark?
Irritated, right? Especially if you're on a radio station or if you're on TV, you want to give that impression that you are fluent in what you're saying. It's a performance sport, right? We are actually in some kind of a sport.
Are we?
I think so. I don't know. What do the listeners think? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I think the and ahs make the conversation sound more real, number one. I don't think it detracts from our performance unless like it's too excessive. And let's face it, we all have I call it like a crutch word, you know. Mine may not be a or a. I find mine is right. I say that as like instead of and to give myself some time to think. And then kind of then move on from that next sentence. So I think we're all guilty of it. Right?
Yeah, that's right. That's something called the Toastmasters, of course, where somebody sits down on the side as you're giving your speech with a counter to count all the ums and ahs that you're making. And the objective here is to actually get rid of all the ums and ahs while you're talking. I don't know whether this is okay psychologically. If you train yourself over the long term, it might be a good thing, like your speech becomes more polished. But imagine going into Toastmasters and having your speech counted with how many ums and ahs you're making.
But there's two types. I mean, there's many types of conversations. So the Toastmasters one is like public speaking.
Yes.
So maybe in that kind of forum, there is that necessity to be almost perfect with no ums and ahs. But if you're talking about just daily conversation between, let's say, you and I or with your friends, is it necessary to have this perfect speech? I'm not sure it's required.
Do you think,
and makes you more real, right?
Okay, I take your point. But do you think that this is a kind of skill that is needed in life today when you are forced to be at the forefront and giving a lot of public speeches? Maybe not to a big crowd, but you're certainly addressing a crowd of some sort. For example, on social media, a lot of people are now doing video logging, vlogs, right? I never know how to pronounce that word, but they go on YouTube, and you don't want to be watching a guy on YouTube saying ums and ahs a lot of times. And perhaps, is this a skill that is needed?
I think it's a skill definitely needed, partially because there's just so much competition out there to get people's attention. And even if we just look at it from we kind of narrow it down to getting a job. And this is something I observe at BFM. You know, it amazes me, the interns, how verbal they are, how fluent they sound. And I realize this is partially driven by the fact that, hey, you know, there's a lot of unemployment there. Everybody needs to sell themselves, right?
Yeah.
So if they don't sell themselves,
or to at least at the very basic level, make themselves understood.
Or noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of competition. So everyone has kind of really upped their game in terms of the delivery of what they have to say. It comes across so smooth. I don't think I had that kind of level of fluency, let's say 20 years ago, you know, when I first came out to work. It's a different world out there. So for sure, fluency counts. And maybe all this over time, you know, the awareness, then they don't have the kind of bad habits that I have, the and the ah and the rights.
It's interesting where this development comes from. Do you think it's from the internet, right? We didn't have the benefit of the internet 20 years ago, and we, you know, just simply talk lah. You know?
Yeah,
just talk only lah.
Talk only.
All right, tell us what you think. Do you pepper your speech with ums and ahs? Or we'd like to hear from you. Tweet us or WhatsApp us, and we'll be coming back with more discussion after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, we are the Morning Run, Julian and Xiaoning with you, and that was Love Fool by The Cardigans. Folks, someone a long time ago wrote a book to get you addicted to social media and the internet. His name is Nir Eyal, and he wrote the book Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. And he is one of Silicon Valley's tech prominence, and right now he has written a new bestseller called Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. Basically, he wants to get you out of your addiction. Now, so there are two sides to the argument of screen addiction, right? On one side is that the social media giants like Facebook and Twitter and so on, and Instagram, of course, they have designed their system to get you hooked. Whether you like it or not, you would not be able to control that. And for someone like Mr. Eyal, who invented this idea of addiction, he's on the other side of the camp, and he says it's not the fault of Silicon Valley. It's your own fault, and you're able to get yourself out of that addiction if you really want to.
Okay, wait. Let's rewind a little bit. So he writes a bestseller, let me presume, and in a while ago on how to get people hooked. And now he's writing another bestseller on how to get you unhooked. Okay,
yes.
This guy is quite smart, right?
He's a smart guy. But he's also one of those guys who has quit Google, right? He's actually Google's former... one of those people, actually, I'm not sure if it's Google, certainly working in one of those Silicon Valley and hired to continue getting people hooked. So the question here is, what do you think is the fault of big tech or big whatever, right? Today we have big pharma, we have the big food companies. They are deviously trying to get you addicted to their products. Is it the fault of corporations, society, or can you take things into your own hands and get yourself out of those addiction?
I think it's all of the above. Is that a chicken out answer? But, you know, on some level, yeah, I think we are responsible for our own actions. But a lot of it is also socialization, right? I mean, it becomes acceptable to look at your phone at all hours. There's also pressure. I mean, to be honest, when we look at our phones, for some of us, it's not just, you know, going online and looking at Facebook or Instagram. But it's also a lot of it is work-related. For example, I'm always checking emails, you know. And a little bit of that is the socialization, the expectation of me to always be available, to check, to be up to date on all the news all the time. And it's a little bit of the corporates also, right? Because let's face it, what's on Facebook, sometimes Instagram, is appealing. It's entertaining. You want to look at it.
Well, they made it so, right? So that you can become addicted to it. I mean, there are many times that the government has to step in to curb this kind of behavior. For example, cigarette addiction is something that the campaign against cigarette has been going on for decades now. And it's been proven to be quite successful because you see drops in rates of smoking. There could be other things I can't remember at the top of my head. I think the US right now is trying to focus on dopamine addiction, the opioid addiction. And these are the kind of things that get us hooked. But this guy's story is quite interesting. He, in the past, he had been addicted too. I mean, he was overweight and he really instituted some measures for himself to stay off food, you know, to put barriers and blockage in front of him so that he doesn't have easy access to the food. And he's recommending the same kind of thing for your social media. For example, if you are working, you can put your device far, far away. Or if you're addicted to food, you can basically put a lock on your fridge to prevent you from going there. You know, a timestamp lock on your fridge. Is that kind of thing that he's suggesting for social media addiction? Well, what do you think? Does it work?
Well, I'm trying to laugh here.
But I can see a lot of people shaking their head. But this is, after all, somebody who knows what he's talking about, right?
Well, let's face it. All our phones have that option, right, where we can restrict screen time. Now, I have it on. And I'm guilty of, you know, you've got the tab where you can say ignore for 15 minutes, ignore for 1 hour. And I pressed those tabs before. So yeah, your phone can...
And what happens?
You can go access the phone again. So you tell yourself, okay, so you have this function on the iPhone which says you're only allowed screen time for a certain hours. So let's say 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And any time after that, a kind of message will pop up and say screen time locked. But you also have an option to ignore for 15 minutes, ignore for what, for, you know, just ignore. And I press the ignore button quite a fair bit. So sometimes it's the willpower is just not there, you know.
Okay.
Or you feel like if you don't kind of look at it, something bad will happen.
So what can be done? Because this is a problem, right? It's a serious problem. We are seeing unprecedented rates of depression and mental illnesses. People are getting more and more of that. And a lot of times I think it's because they're checking social media and comparing themselves to fake identities, right, that forward themselves as having a good life. So they compare themselves to that and they compare the amount of likes they're getting on their updates and not getting as many likes as the next guy. And they get depressed, right?
I'm not sure that that's the only reason why people, you know, that's the only negative thing other than the depression. I think it's also sometimes, do you think your time spent on the phone or the iPad could be better spent doing other things?
Yeah,
it's so, as simple
so,
as that.
So is so it institutionalized? Like, is it like smoking? Right? Should the government step in and do something about this?
I'm not a big fan of government intervention.
Not even for smoking?
Smoking,
you
I think...
You agreed to smoking, right?
I think smoking is a free will thing. But yes, the government's concept of, like, you know, having all those pictures showing you the consequences of this habit is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
So here, how do you control this? What is the consequence? What, you're going to have pictures of sad people on the iPad?
Well, there could be other ways. For example, the US is proposed recently to have that to stop the infinite scrolling on Instagram, to do away with likes and things like that. Those are just proposals.
Yeah, maybe things like
not
that.
Implemented
or even maybe things like be more strict about kids having access to phones in school. You know, things like that.
All right. Tell us what you think. Do you have an addiction on social media or any other addiction? And should the government do something about it? All right. We're heading up to news. And here is Such Great Heights by the Postal Service, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the Morning Run. And that was Sheryl Crow with The First Cut. The First Cut is the Deepest. And talking about cuts, Dr. Mahathir, Tun Dr. Mahathir, our very own Prime Minister, has apologised. He has said sorry for what effectively amounts to a bailout of the tycoons and is a very passive-aggressive way of saying sorry, I suppose. And he's saying that if he didn't bail them out, then the country would have lost a lot of tax revenues as well as staff of those particular companies would have to be laid off and retrenched.
Yeah, he's referring to this our last great financial crisis, right? Between 1997 and 1998, when I think, you know, the economy just literally came to a grinding halt, the stock market collapsed, and our ringgit went to as high as
five US dollar.
I think to the pound was 7 or 8. I remember it was a really gloomy, dark days, wasn't it? And it wasn't just us; it was the whole Southeast Asia that was doing very badly. Indonesia, Thailand. I think Thailand started this crisis first.
Thailand,
right?
Triggered it actually, because the baht was devalued, and that triggered a crisis across Asia. Asia, the contagion just spread around Asia.
Yeah, I remember during that time, I was actually starting to work, actually, and it was terrible times. I could barely find a job. And there was this, it was something that I don't think anybody knew how to resolve, let's be honest, right? And we did seek IMF help, I think, at that time, and we did.
We considered it.
Yeah, and then we raised interest
rates. You know
who
considered it?
Yeah, our Anwar.
Anwar Ibrahim, right. And then he was jailed after that.
Yeah, who at that time was finance minister, right? I don't know. Do you think what he did made any sense?
Well, here's the thing, right? Where do you draw the line? I mean, if you were the all-powerful prime minister of a certain country, where do you draw a line on good bailouts and bad bailouts? For example,
is there such a thing?
Well, I don't know. That's why you know, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. For example, if you talk about 1MDB, right? Is that if 1MDB were to be bailed out, all of us today would be unanimous in saying that that would be a bad bailout because 1MDB is a company that's hemorrhaging the nation. But what about some of these other companies that that has been bailed out in 1997? For example, I don't know, Malaysia Airlines, Renault, you know, TRI, some of these companies and even companies that belong to Mahathir's own family, right? Are they good bailouts or are they bad bailouts? Because conventional wisdom in finance and economics would say that if you don't bail them out, someone else, a white knight of some sort, will be able to come along and offer to buy over the company at a much lower price and therefore giving those companies a new fresh start because they spend a lower amount of capital buying those companies. They are able to inject more money into the company and therefore support the company for a new era of longer term growth, right? So
yeah,
that's the conventional economic wisdom.
Capitalist theory, right? That the weak should just die off and the strong shall survive. So if your business model is rubbish or you're not making any profit, you should close down.
It's creative destruction.
Yeah, but I don't know. Tun M is not the only one guilty of it. Let's face it, even the US has done bailouts, right? During the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009, they decided to bail out the auto companies, give them some breathing
space. Not only the auto companies, the entire financial system was bailed out with quantitative easing, right? So Dr. Mahathir actually invented a too big to fail 10 actual years before the US invented it.
But they also used the same, but the US used the same excuse, especially for the auto sector, because they said there were a lot of jobs involved, right? And you're talking about the Rust Belt of America, which is mainly the voting public. So yeah, I think all governments are guilty of appeasing maybe the voting public, and they do it for that reason.
Yeah, so I think the jury is still out on whether the US embarked on the correct economic policy, because a lot of people are saying that actually this only benefited the financial sector. All these bailouts and the degree of money, the trillions and trillions of dollars that have been injected into the US economy has not resulted in any improvement, a real improvement of well-being to the people of America. In fact, inequality is at some of its highest levels today. And also in 1997, I think we were very far from ideas like quantitative easing for the people. Instead of bailing out companies, why don't you bail out people? Put money directly into the pockets of people so that they decide on what to spend and they then can provide that support to the economy. But the other point is, we also recently commemorated the anniversary of the Opslalang.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, so Opslalang, the actual date was October 27, 1987. That's very, very long time ago. And that was something that was presided under Dr. Mahathir as well. And he may deny issuing Opslalang. He would say that the police at the time did that thing. But This was a regime under a very powerful prime minister. So is it healthy for so much power to concentrate on just one person who can make such decisions as bailing out all these companies with a lot of the nation's money? A lot of the nation's money was spent until today, right? Some company like Malaysia Airlines need to be bailed out to the extent of 1 billion ringgit a year.
Well, I think the debate about whether there's too much power to have Operation Lalang and to then bail out the country is a valid one. You do need these kind of committees to decide these things, right? And with a signature, you cannot just, you know, put people in indefinite prison, you know, which is what they did with Operation Lalang, is ISA, right, for so long, and then close down the newspapers, for example. To me, that's really something that we should not happen again. As for bailout, I think it's a tough debate, Julian, because, you know, you've got to weigh out so many things. And sometimes when the financial crisis hits you at that juncture, I think it's difficult to decide what is the real right path to take.
Yeah, different prime ministers would focus on different things. All right, it's 6:46. We'll continue with the conversation after this. Thank you. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Linda Ronstadt with Rescue Me. I'm Julian Ng, together with Wong Xiaoning, and thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. Thank you to Jaikanth, who has WhatsApped in saying that dopamine, actually, that's good and bad to it. It helps with movement and attention and learning and emotional responses, but it can also cause addiction. And not only that, the electromagnetic fields from our devices actually also contribute to addiction. So thank you very much for contributing to our conversation on screen addictions.
Yeah, and then we have Ro, who's chimed in on the ums and the ahs in our conversation. He said, you two are good with the uhs and ahs. While I agree it's natural for some, too many and you sound like an old car which can't start. So yeah, okay, sometimes we're guilty of that.
Thank you very much, Ro. I'm afraid that this has become more of a performance sport rather than actually expressing how we feel, right? Sometimes that required smoothness causes a tempest in your heart, right? Your heart is roiling and you can't really express yourself like right now, what's happening to me. Azman Rahman also tweeted in. He's saying that telcos and governments are aware of how the internet is being used when proportions of internet traffic indicate high screen times to sites that may be deemed unhealthy, such as porn. Then it may be right to throttle such sites. Otherwise, screen times is up to individuals. So this is regarding to something that's quite specific, porn. I think porn addiction is a very serious thing the world over as well. But that doesn't mean other forms of screen time is not addictive. So thank you very much for all your messages. And now let's look at how the nation is being framed today through the lenses of the first pages of our newspapers.
Well, The Star says that the headline is Smoking Ban Challenge Stubbed Out. So, you know, this was a high court case where seven smokers brought against this anti-smoking ban in cafes. And yay, you still can't smoke in cafes, which is great news for me. And appeal,
I love that too, yeah, but not my friends who actually own a lot of cafes.
Do you think it really impacted business? I think after a while, people's behavior just automatically changes. It's not like you're never going to go into
that
cafe.
That's true, but that's also not the main question, right? Because smoking is just horrible. I mean, I felt great walking through the entrance of Bangsa Shopping Complex after the smoking ban was instituted, and the air was so fresh.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I think, you know, I'm sorry, if you like to smoke, just go out further, okay?
Further.
Yeah, further and further and further, as far
What's
as possible.
What's the rule? It's like 100 meters away or something like that.
I can't remember the rule, but, you know, at this current juncture, it's nice when they're not at the entrance, they're not at the cafe, and definitely not inside the restaurants. That's terrible.
Okay, the Malaysian Reserve's front page, more job loss seen due to AI, robotics, but new ones will emerge. And the subtitle is, Malaysia is expected to accelerate the adoption of IR 4.0 to compete with the global operating landscape.
And the other headline on the Star is the floods, actually, because, you know, as we know, it's been raining like, you know, very...
Cats and dogs.
Yeah, cats and dogs, and... It's like for hours. So some states have actually been really affected. So Kedah for one. And the impact of that is actually going to be on the paddy crop. Not good for the farmers out there. I mean, it's just an inconvenience for us. But for some people, it's really livelihoods.
I thought paddy fields would like water.
Depending on the cycle,
too much
right?
is no good,
yeah,
right?
Depending on the cycle.
Now and I think we also see a lot of flash floods around.
Yeah. The other news, which is interesting in the Star, is actually page 8 in the Nation, because all eyes are going to be on the Tanjung Pia by-elections. And today, Barisan is going to name their candidate. Because to date, I think Bersatu has named theirs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll be looking forward to that to see whether that is some kind of a referendum on the Pakatan Harapan government. And also on the sidebar of the Malaysian Reserve, TNG Digital, we're talking about AI, TNG Digital plans to launch financial products. And in the first paragraph, the Touch and Go e-wallet is expected to move beyond facilitating payments as it seeks to venture into offering financial products in a year. So you might possibly be able to invest through your TNG card.
Okay. This no end to the users for it. Now, the Straits Times has this interesting story which has been going on for a while, and that's the two state assemblymen and eight others have been charged over terror links. And this is over the LTTE links, which I was always a bit confused because I thought that ended with the war over in Sri Lanka, but, you know, clearly it's not.
Mm-hmm. And it also dovetails the conversation about whether arrest without detention, since we are commemorating the anniversary of Ops-Lalang, whether detention without trial is a good thing for the nation or not in this new Malaysia. All right, it's coming up to 6:55 and we're heading into news. And after that, we'll bring you the top business discussions of the day. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.